Black Track by Wheeler and Tabanez. Commuters traversing the decaying roads of dirty Jersey are generally too busy honking and screaming at each other to pay much attention to the plague of graffiti whizzing past their car windows. To the streaming hordes, the fading spray paint is utterly meaningless, blending together in a mush of color like a bad tattoo sleeving the landscape. For the majority of drivers and their passengers, the paint-stained wasteland rushes by in a blur, but no matter how desensitized or jaded the population has become to the writing on the wall, nobody can ignore Black Track, reigning high above all others. For years, I was convinced that Black and Drac were two different people. It made sense because no one person could have reached such incredible heights without an accomplice. They would have to be a team, I surmised, one person to hold the rope and belay, while the other rappelled down to paint. The graffiti lining the highways was truly an eyesore, a further blight on the already corrupted North Jersey landscape, but Black Track was different. The rest of the population seemed to have no use for graffiti at all, looking upon it as a dirty, low-class form of expression. For me, however, the cryptic bubble letters and indecipherable scrawls were like runes of a mysterious text, hinting at the existence of secret societies and marking the demise of our decadent civilization. Esoteric gang signs and multicolored aerosol murals in depressed cities like Paterson and Newark were the talismans I sought on my daily forays into the jungles of New Jersey. By visiting the drug-infested projects and abandoned industrial backwaters of these ghettos, I was able to capture and amass an extensive collection of graffiti photos using my digital camera. Very early on, when I was first starting this vandal's collage, I began entering the best of my graffiti pictures into a spreadsheet on my computer. Of course, the spreadsheet program wasn't the best way to display photos, but it had other advantages. Each line of my database was like a footnote in a book, conveying the information by itself, but also furthering a larger story that would presumably require many paragraphs, chapters, and sections to reveal the full meaning. As my vandal's omnibus grew, I became obsessed with the elusive tenor behind the graffiti, and this hunger for deeper wisdom drove me out on a daily basis to capture and translate the hieroglyphics of the streets. When I would get home from one of these daily picture-taking missions to my somewhat lonely one-room studio, the first thing I always did was plug my camera into the computer and upload all the day's photos. Then I would sort through the images, choosing a single photo that best represented each piece, and one by one save them into my spreadsheet. After each tag was entered, and usually there were hundreds, I would tab through every cell, punching in the relevant data for the photos. Each line of the sheet had five columns. The first cell always contained the picture itself, which could be clicked to enlarge. The other columns were labeled artist, location, date, and description. It was this fifth column where I spent most of my time writing out detailed observations of each graffiti piece. As these words began to pile up, my photo database became highly searchable, allowing me to cross-reference information about individual artists and North Jersey graffiti as a whole. It also let me flush out the more visceral content of the paintings by exploring how they made me feel as I typed out my somewhat lengthy descriptions of each photo. Why I was compulsively compiling this data, I don't know. But as my spreadsheet evolved into a sprawling document, I began to see patterns emerging. There wasn't any specific message I was receiving, more of a dark mood and a dangerous aura that seemed to radiate from the data as I pored through and studied the nuances of my findings. These shadowy hints inflamed my curiosity and kept me on the case, compelling me to leave my studio each morning with fresh hope that today might be the day when I would stumble across the missing piece of the codec. Out of all the tags I had become familiar with on my forays into the urban wilderness, no artist was more prevalent or prolific on the New Jersey scene than Black Track. Most graffiti writers content themselves with getting up along the highways or leaning out windows of abandoned buildings with paint rollers. They rarely spray their tags above shoulder level, and very few bother to use a ladder. Black Track, however, was up on the highest, most unlikely places, causing people to sometimes stop their cars and stand by the side of the road to gawk at a massive water tower, or stare up at the vandalized face of a six-story brick building. Often, on my journeys into the jungles of New Jersey, I too found myself craning my neck up at the huge block letters of a black drac tag, wondering how in the world anyone could have gotten up there to paint. Some of the spots where black drac hit were truly impossible, like the one on the apex of the Edgewood Road Bridge, which spans the New Jersey Turnpike and connects the town of Leonia with Englewood. After reading about the piece on the internet, I paid a visit to the overpass, pulling over on the busy I-95 in Fort Lee to take pictures. Looking up at the massive lettering, I tried to imagine how anyone could have possibly climbed up or rappelled down to this particular spot, much less have the dexterity to paint the black drac tag in 12-foot block font across the apex of the bridge. The underside arch proved to be such a tough spot to reach that when the state decided to remove the enormous tag, they were thwarted when their contractors couldn't find a bucket truck with a long enough arm. The DOT wasn't going to bring in a crane just to paint over some graffiti, so the tag stayed and can still be seen looming over the turnpike to this day. I guess it was inevitable that my obsession with the hidden meaning behind graffiti would eventually focus primarily on the black drac tag. The ground-level scribbling on the streets and the intense muraling I encountered on my frequent trips through New Jersey's abandoned hospitals and factories spoke to me, but their message was elusive. Whatever information I received from them was always vague, offering only small clues as to what might actually be hiding behind the fabric of the jumbled words. In contrast, black drac seemed profoundly prophetic. Although the tag was no less cagey about revealing its shadowy directive, its very boldness hinted that black drac had more to reveal than all the other graffiti artists combined. I collected and grew my digital archive without coming across any clear answers, but never did I feel closer to my goal as when stumbling upon a fresh piece by black drac. It was rare, however, to discover a new black drac before anyone else had seen it. As soon as a fresh piece would appear, somewhere high above the North Jersey landscape, it would immediately be reported on by the news media. The black drac tag was powerful in a way that others weren't. It was because of the what? What was it about the black drac tag, emblazoned so impossibly high above all the other graffiti that spoke not just to me, but also to the population at large? There was something about black drac, a mood or a feeling associated with the tag that almost seemed spooky. The letters were just a little too perfect, a little too tight. When people spoke of the artist, it was in a morbid tone, similar to the way they announced another terrorist strike or airline crash. News of a fresh black drac tag seemed ominous, like a signpost of our doom, or a grim reminder that our habitat has degenerated into a pollution-filled cesspool of our own making. Even for me, there was something unsettling about the appearance of a new tag. But unlike others who were repelled by the cryptic messages, I was drawn to the mystery behind the bold black lettering. I began hunting black drac in earnest, investigating the tag in the same way the police were probably doing, but for vastly different reasons. I knew there must be more black drac pieces that I hadn't photographed, and my subsequent internet research led me on road trips to numerous corners of New Jersey where I had not previously visited. One black drac that I especially wanted to take a picture of could be seen while driving over the Driscoll Bridge on the way down the shore. It was painted on a dilapidated water tower in the yard of a recycling company, the massive black drac written as two words in bold black paint. After seeing pictures of the tag online, I made the trip to Keysby, New Jersey, and actually climbed the water tower in the dead of night just to get a closer look. Going hand over hand up the ladder of the rusting tower was one of the scariest experiences of my life, but the detailed up-close pictures I was able to get and the paint chip samples I collected more than justified the terrifying climb. It was especially worth the effort because this was the only black drac tag that I was able to get close enough to actually touch. All the others were simply impossible to access due to their height or the security at the base of the structures. For example, black drac is notorious for painting water tanks, but except for this one particular tower in Keysby, all the others were tightly sealed and guarded as part of the drinking water supply. After having been hit, it was always a matter of speculation in the newspapers as to how the lettering could be so large and perfect, and also how the artist or artists could have managed to paint over the lenses of every single security camera in the area. There seemed to be no explanation as to how Black Jack was able to achieve such stealth, but I knew that if I was able to crack the mystery, it would help me to decipher the hidden prophecies behind my database. After tracking down every single Black Jack tag that I could find, and almost getting carjacked a few times in some bad neighborhoods, I was able to capture and enter a total of 206 Black Jack tags scattered across the state, most of them in North Jersey. Analyzing the data by cross-checking keywords in my spreadsheet, I began to see a pattern emerging, but couldn't quite put my finger on what steps to take next. One snowy morning, while having my first cup of coffee, an email alert arrived informing me that Black Jack was in the news. I clicked on the link and was taken to a short article, only 15 minutes old, telling of a new Black Jack tag which had appeared on the Rucker Street Bridge overnight. This four-lane lift bridge spans the Passaic River between the towns of Belleville and Kearney, right next to the Arlington Diner. Later that same day, when I went to see it for myself, there was a crowd of spectators standing in the diner parking lot, staring up at a massive Black Jack. It was painted as one word in huge block letters across the first tower of the powder blue bridge, and could be seen all the way from the top of the hill on Route 7. I went home surging with excitement, eager to input my latest entry. The next morning, again over coffee, I received another news alert letting me know that Black Jack had struck once more, this time on the side of the abandoned W.R. Draw, which spans the Passaic River between North Newark and Kearney. I traveled to this spot as well, struggling to find a way to access Route 21 on foot. I ended up having to walk on the abandoned rail tracks from the Newark side and climb down the icy grade of the railroad cut in order to photograph the tracks from below. As I stood there by the side of the roaring highway, taking pictures from my database, I paused to wonder how Black Jack could have possibly gotten those perfect letters up there on the corroded steel of the sagging train trestle. Snapping pictures again, I was suddenly struck with an idea. I said aloud to myself, "The Rucker Street Bridge was painted two nights ago, and then on the following night this tag appeared on the W.R. Draw. Maybe tonight Black Jack will hit the next bridge down." Returning home to my studio, I uploaded the images of the defaced rail crossing and then checked out a digital map to find the next bridge down from the W.R. Draw. It was about 2 miles downstream, located on the border of Kearney and East Newark. It goes by the official name of NX Bridge, but is known locally as the Annie Bridge because the towering rails were used in the dramatic final scenes of the 1982 movie where Little Orphan Annie is saved via helicopter. The NX is a defunct bascule-style crossing that is now abandoned in the open position so boats can navigate the river without obstruction. The bridge's rigid tracks permanently point up into the heavens at a 65-degree angle and loom high above the polluted Passaic River. I was fairly certain after doing some research on the NX that Black Jack would strike again that night, so I positioned myself on the shore around dusk in a spot where I had a good view of the bridge. Fully erect, the NX is quite phallic and clearly visible from other bridges in the area, such as the Clay Street Bridge and the Stickle Memorial Bridge, which carries Route 280 over the Passaic River. Leaving the NX open was necessary for navigation, but it has now been transformed into a monstrous eyesore that can be seen for miles when driving through Kearney, East Newark, Harrison, and Newark. The area near the base of the bridge where I was sitting was actually quite dangerous at night due to crackheads and dope fiends, but I wasn't about to lose my chance of witnessing Black Jack in action. I had to creep my way through the homeless tents lining the abandoned rails to get there, but once I found a good perch on the cement retaining wall of the bridge, I was alone and felt safe enough to settle in for a long vigil. It was very cold that night, only about 20 degrees, but I had come equipped for the temperature with multiple layers of clothes, a wool hat, and chemical hand warmers which I kept in the pockets of my jacket. 3 or 4 hours passed, sitting on the cold concrete with my legs dangling over the Black River below. The massive rail tracks and rusting framework of the corroding bridge loomed over me like a monument to entropy, but I found myself enjoying the soothing calm of the Passaic. All was cold and quiet, the only steady sound coming from the river as it flowed against the wooden bulkhead and the crumbling cement pylons of the bridge. In the sky, the moon was full behind the elevated tracks, and its brilliance merged quite beautifully with the light pollution of Newark to create a glowing crimson haze in the smog. I regretted arriving so early, but I had not wanted to miss it if Blacktrack made an appearance. I kept expecting two guys with coils of rope to appear out of the darkness on the train tracks, but as midnight finally rolled around, I started to doubt they would show up. I decided to sit there for another hour or so, and if they didn't arrive by 1 o'clock, I would call it a night, because by then the cold was starting to really penetrate, and I was getting restless. Just as I was about to stand up to leave, I happened to glance at the bridge and saw something weird flying around against the backdrop of the red sky. It was a black shape, human in appearance, coming in fast from upriver. I sat rigid on the concrete bulkhead, my mind instinctively rejecting the information my eyes were sending into my brain. Humans only fly in comic books and movies, I told myself. What I was seeing couldn't be real. When it got to the bridge, the shape was still moving quickly as it began streaking in and out of the spaces between the rotting steel of the skeletal framework. It kept this up for a while, almost as if it were playing, and then I saw it fly across the river where it slowed down long enough to pause above the flat roof of a factory. The shape was too far away to see more than rudimentary details, but as it slowly descended towards the lights of the factory, I could tell that the flying person I was witnessing had a distinctly feminine appearance. She approached a security camera mounted to the wall, and I couldn't quite tell, but it looked like she flew down and licked the camera's lens before abruptly flying away downstream towards the Clay Street Bridge. She spent some time down by Clay Street, and I could barely see her shadowy shape flitting about the creosote piers. Just when I thought I had lost track of the spirit, if indeed spirit she was, her form came speeding up the river, 20 feet above the shimmering black water. She flew fast towards the Annex Bridge and came to a graceful stop in a fully upright position as she hovered in front of the concrete counterweight. From my vantage point on shore, I was close enough to see that the dark shape was not only female, but also possessed a remarkable beauty. She was completely black from head to toe and didn't seem to be wearing any clothes. In lieu of garments, she was ensconced in misty tendrils of gradient darkness that whispered about her and seemed to be the mysterious source of what kept her aloft. My mind still couldn't comprehend the miracle I was seeing before my eyes, but as it turned out, this strangely beautiful creature had more surprises in store for the night. After surveying the counterweight to her satisfaction, she began levitating in a horizontal position, almost as if she was lying on her stomach. She then flew to the left corner of the weight, where I watched her hover in close to the concrete, stopping with her face only inches from the surface. Then, without touching the wall with her hands, she stuck out her tongue and began licking. From my vantage point, I had a good angle and could see her incredibly long tongue running against the wall, leaving behind a thick coat of black paint. As I watched, I could see that her tongue was far superior to any brush humans could have made. The lines it left behind on the rough concrete went on smoother than even the creamiest interior wall paint on the market today. After every few licks, her tongue would retract back into her mouth and then emerge again, freshly loaded like a wet brush from a paint can, but infinitely quicker and 1,000 times more exact. Sometimes she would pause at her licking to fly backwards so she could get a wider perspective on her lettering. Once satisfied, she would zip back to the wall and enthusiastically resume her work. As the outline of the first few letters began to take shape under her rapidly maneuvering tongue, there was no doubt in my mind that this exotic creature was Blacktrack. As I watched her graceful performance, she hovered before her canvas, flicking that enchanted tongue with the assurance and confidence of an accomplished artist. I sat in awe on my perch, too scared to move and too spellbound to tear my eyes away from this aerial virtuoso. I wanted to reach for my camera, but was so terrified of this supernatural being that I scarcely dared to breathe, lest she sense my presence. But oh, how wrong I was on that point. As she finished her piece and flew back to survey her work for one last time, I saw her glance casually in my direction with a smirk, as if she had known I was there the whole time. In an instant, she flew over to where I was sitting on the concrete retaining wall, my legs still dangling over the river. One moment she was hovering 30 feet away, and the next second she was floating with her face 6 inches from mine, those shadowy tendrils lapping against my winter clothes and tickling my face. I was truly scared, but the hypnotizing elegance of the creature kept me from looking away. Her eyes were glowing emerald green, and in the moonlight her face looked statuesque, as if she had been carved from a glistening slab of ebony marble. I didn't know if I was going to fall in love with her or run screaming into the night, but before I could do anything, she gave me a slight smile which froze me to the spot. As I sat there transfixed, she stuck out her incredibly long tongue and gently licked the bridge of my nose, leaving behind a perfect stripe of black, painty goo. With that, she whooshed off silently into the night, zipping over her freshly painted black track tag, maneuvering through the beams of the NX bridge, and then silhouetting herself against the moon before disappearing into the darkness. I was so dazed by my experience at the bridge that I can barely remember how I managed to get home. Ever since I saw her, I have existed in an absent-minded fog, completely neglecting my essential needs and shirking even the most basic responsibilities. Performing rudimentary tasks, such as brushing my teeth, eating food, or reading a book, has lost all meaning to me. My mind is still struggling to compute and categorize the occurrences I witnessed at the NX Bridge, and the beautiful black track is all I can think about. The only photographic record I have from that night is the selfie I took when I got home. It's of me standing in front of my bathroom mirror, still wearing all my winter clothes, and sporting a thick stripe of black paint down the bridge of my nose. I have finally gotten myself together enough to sit down in front of my machine and enter the photo into my spreadsheet as evidence. I'm now writing out this long description in the fifth column of the database, where you are no doubt reading it for yourself. I have fallen in love with the creature who calls herself Black Drac. I must find her again, and I will use the data in the spreadsheet to do so. I still haven't cracked the code behind New Jersey's cryptic graffiti, but as long as she's out there painting, I'll be on the hunt.